This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of August 25th, 2005.
All right, police!
Bad cop.
No, donut.
Bad.
Cop.
No. Donut.
It's under law, and I rule.
With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto. Stay tuned after this week's headlines for an interview with Alicia Rodriguez. In 1996, at the age of 14, Rodriguez was sexually assaulted by Whitehall, Wisconsin police officer Daniel Wineski in his squad car. She recently settled her civil rights lawsuit against the town of Whitehall, the police department, Officer Wineski, and others. Rodriguez will be joining us later in this program to tell us about her experience and her plans for the future. But first, we'll take a look at what the police did to us this week. Police in Los Angeles handcuffed and roughed up a 7-year-old at his school last Tuesday. The LA Times reports that police were called to the school when administrators overreacted to a situation involving the boy. A witness to the event said that he saw LAPD officers handcuff the boy, then toss him around and knee him in the back. After being held in handcuffs for 3 hours, the boy was taken to a hospital for evaluation and released. A police sergeant in South Lake Tahoe, California, was arrested earlier this month and charged with domestic battery. According to a report this week in the Douglas County Record Courier, sheriff's deputies were called to the home of Sergeant Jeffrey Reagan by his 11-year-old son on August 9th. The boy reported that Reagan tackled his wife as she was running away from him on their property. Both his son and wife claimed that Reagan threw his wife through the back door of their home so hard that she landed 10 feet away. He's also accused of kicking in the bathroom door and ripping up a checkbook in front of her. His wife had announced that she wanted a separation earlier on the evening of the alleged attack. The officer was released on $3,000 bail and ordered not to consume alcohol. Reagan will appear in court next on September 7th.
The Sheriff's Department conducted the criminal investigation, so they advised us when they had an arrest warrant for Officer Floyd, and subsequently he was placed under arrest while here at the Bakersfield Police Department. Anytime an officer is arrested, it's a severe blow to the department, and it's somewhat depressing that any officer gets arrested, but especially when it hits close to home, it makes that much of a difference.
A police officer in Bakersfield, California, was arrested this week and is facing a variety of domestic violence and child abuse charges. KERO reports that Officer Ryan Floyd is being held in custody and has been suspended from the department while a second investigation is completed. Floyd was arrested after a 5-month investigation, which began when a 13-year-old girl complained to authorities that she was repeatedly molested by the officer. State officials are attempting to suspend the law enforcement certification of the chief of police in Camas, Utah. The Park Record reports that Chief Eric Ovard refuses to give up his certification without a fight. The Peace Officers Standards and Training Council has recommended that Ovard lose his certification for a period of 4 years. Ovard pleaded no contest to charges of domestic assault and unlawful detention over an incident involving his stepdaughter, which occurred while he was on duty in March. He was arrested after he was accused of illegally handcuffing the girl and grabbing her by the neck. Ovard was sentenced to pay a $150 fine and complete anger management and domestic violence counseling. If he doesn't break the law again within a year, the charges against him will be dismissed. Ovard's lawyer said in a statement that he should not lose his certification because his plea to the charges was to avoid embarrassment and unwanted media attention for his family, and not because he was guilty of the charges. Ovard remains on duty for the time being.
Trying to promote the music scene.
We found cocaine, we found marijuana, we found mushrooms, psychedelic mushrooms that were being used and sold there.
Some of them dropping out of the chopper and, you know, all in camo, night vision, had their fully auto guns, and they're just knocking people down, you know, telling people to get out of here.
I saw nobody being kicked.
And she had like a broken nose and a lump on her head and bruises on her side, and I don't know, it's more like Gestapo tactics instead of, you know, coming in and just checking it out, making sure everything was okay.
There were no incidences where the officer struck anyone. There was no incident where they used any batons. There were no incidents where gas was used. All those are, we refute those, and those are all incorrect statements.
Sheriff's deputies in Utah County used excessive force to break up an electronic music event last weekend. KSL-TV reports that people who attended the event were terrorized, tear-gassed, and beaten with batons by police officers. Utah County Sheriff James Tracy says the police did not use batons on attendees, but photographs taken by people who were present at the event clearly show law enforcement officers using batons on people. Many of the people who attended the event have posted their accounts of what happened on a website. They describe hundreds of officers emerging from the area surrounding the event, heavily armed and wearing riot gear before attacking the crowd. Police made many arrests, including a man whose family owned the land on which the event took place, but exact numbers of those arrested are not known. A police officer in Denver, Colorado, was charged on Monday with unlawful sexual contact. KMGH reports that Officer Rodney Clark was in uniform but off duty when the alleged incident occurred at the Denver International Airport on July 16th. The woman who was allegedly touched is an airport employee. Clark faces a possible 18 months in jail and a $5,000 fine if he is convicted. A police officer in Chicago was charged last Thursday with bribery and official misconduct. The Chicago Sun-Times says that Officer Mike Allegretti has been accused of asking women to expose their breasts during two separate traffic stops. In November 2004, Allegretti is accused of pulling over a woman for failing to stop at a red light. After discovering she had no license and was an illegal immigrant, he asked the woman to expose her breasts. She refused. He then took her to a police station where he again asked the woman to flash him in exchange for not ticketing her for not having insurance. She again refused. Allegretti then allegedly asked the woman to return to the scene of the traffic stop the following night and dance for him without her underwear on. The woman did not appear but did call police to report the officer. Allegretti is also accused of asking a woman to expose her breasts during a traffic stop in May 2005. In that case, the woman also accuses the officer of asking her to follow him into an alley. She refused and left. The woman also reported the incident to police. Allegretti was taken off patrol duty the day after the May incident. Two Chicago police officers were arrested last Tuesday for excessive use of force against shoplifting suspects at retail stores. An Associated Press report says that officers Larry Guy and Alexandra Martinez have been charged with battery and official misconduct in relation to separate incidents which occurred over the last several months. Martinez is accused of slapping and pulling the hair of a 14-year-old girl in April. Guy is accused of punching and shoving a man in a June incident. Both incidents were captured on videotape. In both cases, the tapes were handed over to police by staff at the stores where the alleged misconduct took place. Neither of the victims of the misconduct have filed complaints. A Carmel, Indiana police officer was sentenced to 40 years in prison this week for child molestation. WRTV reports that Officer Paul Terry was arrested in January 2004 and charged with repeatedly molesting an 11-year-old girl and attempting to molest another. He pleaded guilty to three molestation charges and one attempted molestation charge 2 months ago. Terry has also been sentenced to serve 10 years of probation after serving his prison time, during which he is forbidden to have any contact with anyone under the age of 18. Terry was a police officer for 26 years before his arrest. A 12-year-old boy was bitten by a police dog in South Bend, Indiana, last Friday. Police officers were using the dog to search for a suspect in a hit-and-run accident when the boy was attacked by the dog. The boy required stitches for a half-inch-deep wound on his thigh and other puncture wounds and will have to use crutches to move around for a short time. At the time of the attack, the boy was relaxing on the porch of his home with other family members.
Sir, now do you understand these charges and the maximum penalties?
Yes, I do.
Okay. If you do post bond, you will be involved in pre-trial supervision.
A police officer recently named Officer of the Year in Albion, Michigan, was charged with sexual misconduct involving a minor last Friday. WOOD reports that Officer Kyle Cheney is facing four charges. He has been charged with taking nude pictures of a teenager and other unspecified sexual abuses involving the same individual. An investigation is ongoing, and Cheney is being held in a neighboring county jail on a $500,000 bond. If he is released, he is ordered not to have any contact with the victim or anyone else under the age of 18. A woman in Windsor, Connecticut, is suing her police officer ex-boyfriend, the city, and its police chief. According to the Manchester Journal-Inquirer, all three defendants were served with a lawsuit last Friday. The woman claims in her lawsuit that her ex-boyfriend, Officer Charles Bagley, took explicit photographs and videos of her without her consent and showed them to other officers while he was on duty. The woman claims that Police Chief Kevin Searles was aware of the relationship, which began when the woman was a 17-year-old high school student, and did nothing about it. Bagley, who was married at the start of the relationship, eventually moved in with the woman and continued a relationship with her for several years. The photographs and videotapes made by the officer are now in the possession of the FBI. Bagley is accused of photographing and videotaping the woman undressing, bathing, and having sex with him without her knowledge. Last year, the officer allegedly threatened the woman by stating that he intended to regain possession of the material and distribute it. The lawsuit also seeks a court order preventing Bagley or the city from possessing the material in the future. Bagley resigned from the police department in January after being arrested 8 times over a 6-month period. The arrests were for incidents ranging from theft to domestic assault and drunk driving.
At about 5:30 this morning, one of our patrol units was proceeding north on Route 11 in Cicero to a call in Burton. And from what we understand, there was a bicyclist in the roadway. Our vehicle struck the bicyclist. And at this time, we understand the bicyclist is DOA.
A cyclist in Cicero, New York, was killed after being struck by a police cruiser on Saturday. News 10 reports that an unnamed officer was responding to a call when the biker was hit. The officer was not injured. The local sheriff's department is conducting an investigation. Allegations of a police beating sparked a demonstration in Elizabeth, New Jersey last Thursday. According to the Asbury Park Press, a man filed a complaint in which he claimed he was pulled from his parked car, beaten, and berated by 2 police officers a few days earlier. The Elizabeth Police Department's Internal Affairs Unit is investigating the claims.
Oh my God!
Police in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, are accused of using excessive force against anti-war protesters at a demonstration on Saturday. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette says that the protesters accused the police of using a taser on 2 people and spraying others, including a 4-year-old, with pepper spray. Protesters say that a man with multiple sclerosis was toppled from his motorized wheelchair by police officers. Other protesters were clubbed with batons, and one 68-year-old woman was allegedly bitten by a police dog. 2 protesters were hospitalized and 5 were arrested. 1 of the arrested was a minor. The following report was broadcast on Free Speech Radio News earlier this week.
For the 2nd time this month, the Pittsburgh organizing group and supporters shut down the Army recruiting station adjacent to the University of Pittsburgh campus. On both dates, instead of facing protesters, military recruiters closed their doors and stayed home. While previous counter-recruitment actions encountered little resistance from the police, this weekend, 2 protesters were hospitalized after police used tasers, pepper spray, dogs, and batons. Before the confrontation, a crowd gathered at a rally that kicked off the march to the recruiting center. Protest organizer Jeremy Schenck.
We can win. The war machine blinked today. They're shut down today. There's going to be no one from Oakland, from the East End, in our neighborhoods being tricked into fighting this war today. So we should be really proud of ourselves. Way to go, everybody.
The campaign to shut down this recruiting station is part of larger efforts to counter military recruiting. Literature has been distributed at local high schools, recruiting tables at colleges have been picketed, and the Pittsburgh Board of Education is considering a policy that would let students more easily opt out of providing their information to military recruiters. After the march, protesters gathered on the sidewalk in front of the recruiting station. While speakers addressed the crowd, a freelance Fox News cameraman was allegedly shoved. He complained to the police, who then chased and arrested several people. Officers fired pepper spray at the crowd, which included young children. Later, a police dog bit a 68-year-old woman from behind. Without warning, one officer fired a taser several times at demonstrators. Deanna Caligiuri, who was hospitalized after being shocked by a taser, described her experience.
I was taken to the ground by a police officer. During that time, I was pepper sprayed. The officer picked up my glasses, sprayed my face with the pepper spray. Once I got to the ground, I was then tasered in the thigh for what felt like an eternity. It was the most excruciating pain I've ever felt. I felt like I was burning. My hand reached down to feel what was on my leg, and I felt an electrical shock running through my entire body. I could not stop myself from screaming. It was horrifying. I could not believe that after I had already been sprayed and on the ground, they would then proceed to taser me.
The use of tasers on demonstrators is unprecedented in Pittsburgh. But while activists call the taser guns torture toys, Taser International describes them as a safer weapon for police use.
The Taser X26C fires two probes up to a distance of 15 feet, transmitting patented shaped pulse energy into the central nervous system of the target, safely causing immediate incapacitation.
David Myron of People Against Police Violence disputed Taser International's claims.
These so-called less lethal weapons have been responsible for more than 150 deaths. There are five suits pending of Taser International. We demand an immediate moratorium on the use of tasers.
Also, protest organizers have called for the suspension or dismissal of the officer who fired his taser three times and for all charges to be dropped. At least nine people have filed complaints with the city's Citizen Police Review Board for excessive force and unbecoming conduct. From Rust Belt Radio, this is Andalusia Knoll and Matt Toops.
A man in Somerset, Pennsylvania, has filed a lawsuit claiming brutality by a police officer. According to the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, Officer Aaron Fulton is accused in the lawsuit of beating up a man who he was arresting for drunk driving in August 2003. The victim of the beating says that Fulton threw him off the four-foot-high porch of his home face first and then permanently injured the man's right arm and shoulder when the officer jumped on top of him. The victim of the beating was never found guilty of the drunk driving charge.
All right, sir.
We're not doing it, okay. Officer. Don't. Look, I just got caught.
Damn it. Put your hands behind your back.
You're not fucking okay, motherfucker.
Behind your back. Sir, I'm going to do it again. Sir, put your hands behind your back because you're going to get in. Put your gun down. On the ground.
A prank played by an unknown person caused some concern for Maryland state troopers last Friday. The Hagerstown Herald Mail reports that a recording of an Ohio state trooper arresting a drunk driver and using a taser was played on the Maryland trooper radio frequency. The recording of the officer fighting with the suspect raised alarms for troopers who believed that one of their officers was under attack. Authorities do not expect they will be able to identify the person responsible for the broadcast.
And appalled at the ease with which these law enforcement officers and public officials sold their positions for cash.
Three police officers and a sheriff's deputy in Tennessee were charged on Monday in connection with a federal investigation where the four are accused of stealing money they thought belonged to drug dealers. According to an Associated Press report, Memphis police officer Charles Smith was charged with obstruction of justice and lying to a federal officer after he was accused of warning a fellow officer that he would be targeted in the federal investigation. Officer Roderick Smith is charged with theft and attempting to possess cocaine. Officer Des Skinner is charged with theft and conspiracy. Shelby County Sheriff's Deputy Marvin Wilson is charged with two counts of theft. Two Cooksville, Tennessee police officers were among eight people arrested last week after a three-year-long FBI sting investigation. WTVF reports that officers Reno Martin and Jason Blythe were charged with crimes ranging from money laundering to selling drugs and illegally transporting guns. Both were arrested last Tuesday by FBI agents. A police officer in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, was charged last Friday with two counts of dissemination of obscene material to minors under the age of 13. The Outer Banks Sentinel reports that in the case of Officer Randy Cottrell, the alleged victims are 7 and 9 years old. Cottrell was suspended with pay on July 8th while the State Bureau of Investigation conducted an investigation of a complaint against the officer. Last week, he was suspended without pay, pending the outcome of his trial. Cottrell will appear in court next on September 2nd. A police officer in Pearson, Georgia, has been accused of stealing from the city. WALB reports that Officer Jimmy Lankford is alleged to have stolen a money order that was being used to cover a jail inmate's costs. He has been charged with theft by taking by a public official and violation of office. Lankford was fired from his job, and it is expected that his law enforcement certification will be revoked.
I've thought long and hard about this situation, and here's the bottom line.
A complaint filed last Wednesday accuses the Orange County, Florida sheriff of corruption. An Associated Press report says the complaint accuses Sheriff Kevin Beery of theft, doing business with his own agency, and using privileged information for his private gain. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement has not decided whether or not to investigate. Beery owns a private security company which was awarded lucrative contracts by government and law enforcement agencies. The complaint against Beery was filed by a former Orlando police officer. A police officer in Groveland, Florida, is under investigation for firing a gun at a moving vehicle on a busy highway. WFTV reports that the gun belonging to Officer Marcio Cardoso was taken into evidence after the incident. The Lake County Sheriff's Department is conducting the investigation. Shooting at moving vehicles is strongly discouraged by Groveland police policy. Cardoso is currently on administrative leave. A police officer in Shaw, Mississippi, is facing murder charges after the death last Tuesday of a woman who he shot on August 4th. According to the Jackson Clarion Ledger, Officer Mark Highbaugh was already held in custody facing aggravated assault charges when the charges were upgraded. The woman was killed by complications resulting from being shot in the chest several times by the officer. Highbaugh has since resigned from his job. A police officer in Jackson, Mississippi, is on administrative leave after being accused of pointing his gun at a man and damaging the man's truck. WAPT reports that an unnamed officer bashed the man's parked truck with his flashlight and then threatened the man at gunpoint and accused the man of having sex with a prostitute. Another witness confirms that the officer ignored a senior officer's protest that he was behaving inappropriately. The Jackson Police Department's Internal Affairs Unit says that the accusations against the officer are being taken quite seriously. WAPT also says that they filed a complaint after the same officer handcuffed one of their news photographers over a parking infraction at the scene of a fatal accident involving a police car. The chief of police in Lutcher, Louisiana, was arrested last Wednesday and charged with selling illegal drugs to an undercover agent. The LaPlace Observateur reports that Chief Corey Pittman has been charged with 5 counts of illegal distribution of crack cocaine, cocaine hydrochloride, and hydrocodone. The USDEA began an investigation of the chief 3 months ago. During the investigation, agents purchased drugs worth around $5,000 from Pittman, who sometimes wore his uniform during the transactions. Pittman is being held in custody for his own safety. He was elected chief of police in 2002. He admitted to selling drugs when he was a youth in a local newspaper article in 2003. A man in Allen, Texas, died last Friday, 2 weeks after he was pepper sprayed by police officers. An Associated Press report says that an FBI investigation is underway, as well as several other local investigations. 2 police officers pepper sprayed the man while they were arresting him for an outstanding warrant for a seatbelt infraction on August 4th. He was on life support from the time of his arrest until his death. The 2 officers involved in the incident have been placed on paid leave. A police officer in McKinney, Texas, has been sentenced to probation for sexually abusing a 14-year-old female relative. The McKinney Courier-Gazette says that Officer Michael Vallow was originally charged with 4 counts of aggravated sexual assault of a child, but that 3 of the charges were dropped in exchange for the officer's guilty plea to one of them. Vallow could have been sent to prison for life, but the judge decided instead to sentence the officer to 10 years of probation. He must also pay a $3,000 fine, serve 320 hours of community service, and has been ordered to stay at least 50 yards away from his victim at all times. Vallow must also register as a sex offender. A Dallas, Texas police officer led Arlington police on a high-speed chase on Monday. KXAS reports that the unnamed officer attempted to flee when officers were sent to her home to check on her well-being. After the chase, police tried unsuccessfully to negotiate with the officer, but were eventually forced to break the windows of the officer's car to remove her. The officer is being held on an emergency mental detention. No criminal charges have been filed. A police officer in Killeen, Texas, was arrested for theft last Monday. KWTX reports that Officer John Taylor was charged with theft over $500 and under $1,500. He is currently free after posting a $1,500 bond. Taylor resigned from his job last Wednesday. Two police officers in El Paso, Texas, who were arrested last week for having sex with a child, were fired from their jobs on Friday. KVIA reports that Officer Louis Nava and Philip Amato were both charged with sexual assault of a child. Nava is also facing other charges in relation to the same victim. Sexually explicit photographs of the girl were found in Officer Nava's locker. Nava failed to dispute his termination, but Amato's lawyer says that he plans to appeal his termination. The prosecutor in Smith County, Kansas, says he is not willing to work with the local sheriff because of concerns about the sheriff's criminal history. The Associated Press reports that Sheriff Ellsworth Murray has been convicted of illegal eavesdropping and official misconduct. The local prosecutor says that he is unlikely to file criminal charges based on investigations by the sheriff's department until a new sheriff is in place. The prosecutor complains that Murray's veracity would be questioned on the stand at trial and that he could not rely on the sheriff to be a credible witness. Murray has been forbidden from entering the prosecutor's office, and all communication between the two must be over the telephone. A sheriff's deputy in Maricopa County, Arizona, continues to be paid his salary even though he pleaded guilty to a felony. The Associated Press reports that Deputy Leo Hawk has come to an agreement with federal prosecutors for failing to report his $78 million pyramid investment scheme. Hawk has been on leave since July 12th when he and his father were charged with defrauding investors of millions of dollars when he was vice president of the United States Reservation Bank and Trust. Some of the allegations against the deputy are reported to be connected to his police duties. Even though Hawk has agreed to the plea, he cannot be fired from his job until the judge accepts it. This is usually done at sentencing, which for Hawk is scheduled for October 17th.
We appreciate the risk and that there is risk in the situation and with any sort of restraint mechanism.
I may have to apply multiple taser usages in order to protect myself and potentially others. But as the report stated, we do recognize that some of these issues surrounding multiple applications are becoming a flag for us.
There's no doubt that there is a concern with high energies to the body and the heart, especially in people at risk who are on drugs.
They keep calling it a non-lethal weapon, except that everybody keeps dying.
We don't think it's adequate for police forces to rush the use of a weapon when there are remaining questions about the implications in certain circumstances.
A man in Tallahassee, Florida, who was shocked in the genitals by a taser, has filed a lawsuit against the city and Taser International, the manufacturer of the weapons. A report in the Tallahassee Democrat says that the man became impotent and permanently lost control of his bladder after being shocked by Officer April Dubrava last June. At the time he was shocked, the man was defenseless and handcuffed. The man was treated at hospital but was told by a doctor that the numbness in his groin would go away on its own. According to the lawsuit, the man has no feeling or control in his genitals and must wear adult diapers. He is seeking more than $75,000 in damages. A report prepared for Canadian police chiefs says that the benefits of tasers far outweigh their risks. The report from the Canadian Police Research Center noted more than 150 taser-related deaths in the United States and Canada, but said that no evidence exists to link the deaths to tasers. Police officers in five U.S. states are suing Taser International, claiming they were injured when they were shocked with one of the weapons during taser training sessions. A police chief in Missouri who agreed to be shocked with a taser to demonstrate the safety of the devices to his officers while hooked up to a heart monitor says that he suffered heart damage and two strokes. He also says that he suffered painful, permanent, and progressive loss of vision and hearing and other neurological damage. Other police officers complain in their lawsuits of broken teeth, spinal fractures, burns, a dislocated shoulder, and other soft tissue injuries. The lawsuits accuse Taser International of misleading law enforcement agencies about the potential of their weapons to cause injuries. The company is also accused of hiding reported injuries from potential customers. The company claims that over 100,000 police officers have been shocked with Tasers during training without serious injury. The officers who are suing them also dispute that claim. Taser International continues to maintain that its products are safe despite this lawsuit and dozens of other lawsuits filed by both private individuals and police. Taser International says that more than 7,200 law enforcement agencies in the U.S. and Canada are either using or testing their Tasers. A congressman from Alabama has announced his intention to introduce federal legislation to regulate Tasers. He plans to regulate the manufacture, sale, possession, and distribution of the devices. The mayor of Birmingham recently halted the use of the weapons by police there.
The Coventry Police Department responded to a call for domestic violence at 44 Wall Street.
Other than the killings already reported on this week's show, police also killed people this week in Rensselaer, Indiana, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where police killed a 17-year-old on Sunday, Coventry, Connecticut, Lumpkin, Georgia, and Dallas, Texas. In 1996, at the age of 14, Alicia Rodriguez was forced to perform a sex act on Whitehall, Wisconsin police officer Daniel Wineski. He would later threaten her at gunpoint, telling her that he would kill her and her family if she ever told anyone about the incident. Last November, Wineski was sent to prison for 7 years in a case which exposed a litany of sexual abuses committed by the officer and the knowledge of Wineski's activities by his supervisors and other law enforcement officers. On our February 3rd program, we featured an interview with Terry Miles, who worked for decades to expose Wineski's abuses. After Wineski was sent to prison, Rodriguez filed a civil rights lawsuit. 2 months ago, a judge in a federal court threw out her lawsuit, claiming that Wineski's threats at gunpoint did not violate her civil rights. The town of Whitehall chose that moment to settle the suit out of court, and Rodriguez became the recipient of a $320,000 settlement. Now that the case has been settled, Rodriguez is free to speak about her experience, and I spoke with her from her home in Onalaska, Wisconsin, last month.
Well, he had threatened me on more than one occasion. In 99, when I became pregnant with my first child, is when I decided I needed to tell somebody about what had happened. Just, you know, I didn't know how I was going to be able to deal with the pregnancy and everything with the emotional toll that the Wineski assault was taking on me. So I wrote a letter to a social worker, and I didn't hear anything back from him, so I kind of just concluded on my own that he either didn't believe me or he didn't get the letter. It was, I would say at the most about a week or so after I wrote the letter to the social worker that I approached Chief Estenson, and I told him I had to make a complaint about Wineski, and Estenson asked me if it was sexual, and I said yes, and he told me he'd come by, and, well, he didn't.
Did you ever talk to anyone else in law enforcement?
Not until DCI contacted me in January of 2004.
Who were the defendants in the lawsuit?
Okay, it was Dan Wineski, Larry Estenson, and the City of Whitehall's Employers Insurance, which was Wausau Insurance Company. Mm-hmm. So I was basically suing the city, but the insurance is pretty much what it came down to. You know, how, I don't know if you know much about insurance, but that's how it plays out. You know, since they're covered for things like this, it's basically the insurance. So.
And how? When did you file the lawsuit?
In January of this year. The criminal stuff was all done in November of 2004. Actually, I never went to court for the civil case. When we turned in our summary of judgments, which is where both sides turns in their findings on the case, and, you know, we say why there's a case and the other side says why there's not, and the judge makes his ruling, and the judge, as you know, dismissed my case. And we had already had mediation set up for the 11th of this month, and when it got dismissed, the other side, the defense, contacted my attorney and asked if we were still interested in mediation. And we said we were, just to kind of see where things were at. We actually did not think it was going to settle. But we went ahead with the mediation down in Madison, and we were able to come to an agreement. So.
What's your understanding of the reasons why the judge dismissed the civil suit in the first place?
From my understanding, it was because we were suing on the basis of violation of my civil rights. It was a civil rights case. And one of his rulings was that the threat that Wineski made, you know, with his weapon under my chin, was not a violation of my civil rights. Another one of his reasonings was that the statute of limitations had expired. And in a sexual assault case, when you're a minor at the time, you have until you're of the age of 30 to report it, or you get an additional 2 years after the perpetrator's in prison if he was an actual threat to you, and that's why you didn't report it. So either way, I fell between those statutes because I'm not 30, and obviously Wineski has not been in prison for 2 years. But he ruled on an old statute because the original statute was just 6 years from the time of the crime, which would have put me past the statutes. But in 97, the legislator changed the statute to what I had just explained, and he didn't pay any attention to that. And when that was brought to the defense's attention, they already were aware that the judge had made a mistake. So we were all very confident that we would win on appeal.
Do you think that ruling had an effect on the settlement?
Meaning the settlement amount?
Yes.
Definitely. I'm pretty confident that had that decision come this last week instead of the week before, that we would have walked away with a larger settlement. But, you know, ultimately it changed gears when that decision came, and I had to make a decision if I wanted to go through the appeal process or get it done, because like I've stated, it's not about the amount of money. You know, I needed to, you know, make it very well noted that this cannot be tolerated or accepted. And I also had to work on getting my life back. So, and the appeal process can be quite lengthy, and I wasn't sure that I wanted to go through with that. So.
Do you think, so the defense, it's fair to argue, would have been taking advantage of the judge's erroneous ruling?
Correct. Correct. And
and the insurers.
Exactly. Exactly. And they, you know, they knew obviously they had some time, even if we didn't settle that day, to kind of play their cards, because an appeal process takes, I would say, probably 9 months at the very least to even get through the appellate court. And so they knew that they had some time and they didn't have to offer up any large numbers at that time, because at that point, the ball was technically in their court. Even though we would have been the ones making the next decision about the appeal, the judge had just ruled in their favor. So the decision was, but the fact that they still wanted to mediate and the fact that they're willing to settle for more than $250,000, I think, says a lot about, you know, what they were actually thinking their chances were.
So you're putting this behind you?
Yes. I'm trying. You know, every day is a new day. And I wish I could just wake up tomorrow and say, okay, you know, it's behind me, it's over with. Unfortunately, I don't have that luxury. Just as Wineski, when his prison sentence is up, that's it. You know, he's done and he can go on with his life. Myself, as well as all of the other women that he assaulted and took advantage of, you know, will live with this for the rest of our lives. And there is no way that I can say, you know, what effect it's going to have on me, you know, a year from now, 10 years from now. But every day seems to get a little better. And I have my upfalls as well as the downfalls. And it's just taking it day by day. And that's what I'm trying to do. You know, just move on with my family and trying to put it behind me as best as I can. I'll never be able to forget it, but to be able to live a normal life and to be able to help people because of my experience is basically what I'm going to thrive for.
So you told me you were considering possibly going to school or...
Yes, I mean, I definitely intend on going to school. I'm not exactly sure what I might, you know, study or, you know, take into as my degree. But I know I have a lot of options with my life experiences alone that I think could make a tremendous difference in other people's lives, and that's what I want to do.
Have you thought of any general areas of study, or like you're thinking of maybe going to law school?
Yeah, I've thought about law just because I don't think there's enough legal representation out there for victims and victims' rights. We kind of get tossed around, you know, from social work to the authorities, and it's become very apparent that those aren't always the right avenues. And there's a lot of people out there who maybe have a position or their name badge says that they're able to deal with this, but they don't have a clue how to. And I think with my experience, even though it was a negative one, I can somehow turn into a positive. And that's really what I'm going to do. I'm going to do something to help other people in my situation, whether it's, you know, with law enforcement or whoever, because these things happen way too much. And there's a lot of women out there that don't report it. And that's really unfortunate.
When we talked with Terry back in February, and a lot of the reading I've done as well has led me to believe that Officer Wineski had quite a few other victims. I know you or your lawyers were in touch with some of them prior to Officer Wineski's guilty plea.
Correct.
Do you think that there's a chance that he'll be brought up on other charges?
I hope so, because it's very clear that there are other victims out there that are still within the statute, and they either have not wanted to come forward, you know, for whatever their personal reasons would be. And the Attorney General has said that if there was more women out there or victims that were within the statute of limitations, that they would definitely prosecute. And I think it's very important that they're aware of that, the women out there, because if they're, you know, maybe hesitant because of, you know, where they live or where they're at in their life, and, you know, they've tried to put it behind them, it really is not that easy to just try to walk away. And the only way you're really going to get closure is by at least trying to get some sort of justice for what was done to them. And I think that they need to at least tell their side as to what happened to them and try to seek some sort of help, you know, whether it's in the justice system or just professional help in general. Some people might be a little intimidated by the road that I've had to travel to get here, because it hasn't been easy. I've never tried to make it look easy, though, because I would hate for a victim to come forward and go through what I went through and kind of be upset because, you know, I said it was going to be one way and it was the complete opposite. It's a hard road to travel, but when you get there, it's worth it. I feel that way now.
So is that your advice to other people out there who are either scared or intimidated or not coming forward because they don't think they'll win?
Yeah, just they need to look inside themselves. I would never try to force somebody to come forward, but if I could help somehow to show them that it would be okay and that there are people out there that will help them get through the process, no matter how long and how hard it becomes, that in the long run it's so much better to get it out and to start to deal with it and to know, because when you keep it inside and you know you don't come forward for whatever reason, you feel like you're at fault and you feel like you're not, you know, worth it, you're worthless, you know, nobody's going to believe you, that it's your fault that it happened. And that's one of the worst feelings ever. And it's just not true. I mean, nobody deserves this. And, I mean, I don't care if you act a certain way, you look a certain way, your family's a certain way, that doesn't matter. And it's very easy to believe the negative stuff. And the longer you let this intimidate you, the longer they win. And they get that control. And that's what they want, is that control and that power. And, you know, the longer you keep to yourself and just kind of go inside your shell, the more they get to take advantage of you. And that needs to be stopped.
Thanks to Alicia Rodriguez for taking the time to speak with me. Check out our February 3rd program for a lot more about Whitehall, Wisconsin police officer Daniel Wineski. That's all for Bad Cop No Donut this week. You can send us your comments and story ideas. The email address for this program is ron@ckln.fm. Thanks to everyone who sent in stories for this week's show. Bad Cop No Donut is produced at CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto and can be heard in Washington, D.C. on WSQT 90.7 FM and in Moscow, Idaho on KRFP 92.5 FM. I'm Ron Anisich, and I look forward to telling you more about the police next week.
Your face before.